Shalom, welcome to AshJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Rab Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, this week we really saw how right the Jewish Task Force, JTF, has been about Barack Hussein Obama and how wrong everyone else has been. We told you from the start that he's a Muslim Jew hater. We told you from the start that he supports his fellow Muslims in Muslim terrorist Iran and that he literally would like to see Israel destroyed. He hates the Jewish people, hates Israel, and would love to see Israel destroyed. And this week, we saw from Barack Hussein Obama the absolute proof of what this Muslim Jew hater is really all about. Everyone else said, no way, it can't be. He can't be a Jew hater. He can't be a Muslim. Impossible. And we have told you since 2004, we've been warning about him. Since 2004, 4 years before he ran for president, when he first ran for the U.S. Senate in Illinois. In 2004, we warned about him. And ever since then, we told people, this is a very dangerous Muslim Jew hater. And that he literally hates Israel and the Jewish people, hates America, hates white people. Well, look at what happened this week. People are shocked at some of the things he's saying this week. For instance, the agreement between the United States and Iran, the so-called nuclear agreement, and any agreement between the United States and Iran, automatically is terrible. Iran will never keep any agreement. They've never kept any agreement. They never will keep any agreement they make. Anything that leaves them with anything in the nuclear area is a bad agreement. A little cancer is enough to kill. You can't leave a little cancer in the body. You've got to take the entire cancer out. Iran's entire nuclear program is a cancer, and leaving any of it intact ensures that Iran will build nuclear bombs, God forbid. And so, this terrible agreement that they're working on, we were told, would be an agreement where gradually they would start lifting sanctions after Iran took certain steps, certain pathetic steps, to freeze their program and not use certain centrifuges. And after this strict system of so-called verification, Then they gradually start lifting sanctions over a period of years. That's what we were told by Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry and Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton started this whole process when she was Secretary of State during the first 4 years of Obama's evil administration. So we were told that's what it would be, gradual lifting of the sanctions over a period of years, which is absolutely disastrous and catastrophic. But now Obama says, no, that's not good enough. We must help the Muslim terrorists, mass-murdering dictators of Iran save face. We have to help them save face. We have to worry about them saving face, these mass-murdering butchers. And so he says, no, we've got to remove all sanctions. Maybe we should remove all sanctions immediately at once. Let's have he called it a creative agreement. Let's be creative. Let's just remove all sanctions and give them everything all at once, and hope that they'll keep their word after that, after they get all the technical and economic ability to build hundreds of nuclear missiles. Because if they're going to get all the sanctions removed, then they're going to get this new massive infusion of Western capital and Western technology and massive new oil sales and natural gas sales, which they'll be able to do. If all of a sudden this is given to them immediately, then they'll be able to build a gigantic nuclear program, God forbid. But Obama says, let's be creative. This is a creative agreement. Let's remove all sanctions at once. Before anything else, let's just give them everything all at once. And then we'll take them at their word after that. That's the first thing he proposes. I mean, the Ayatollah himself could not have proposed a better deal for Muslim terrorist Iran. This is as if the Ayatollah himself is making the proposal. I mean, we in effect have an Ayatollah in the White House. And then Obama said something else. after saying how he was concerned about Iran has to save face and we have to be nice to them, we have to remove all sanctions at once for them and completely give them everything they're asking for, even though they've never kept their word on anything and they're responsible for the murder of millions of people over the years. Despite all of that, let's give them everything at once. But after saying that, he then said that he was surprised that Russia had not sold S-300 missiles to Iran even sooner. Russia wants to sell S-300 missiles to Iran to help Iran defend their nuclear bomb-making program against a possible Israeli attack. If the Israeli Air Force or the U.S. Air Force, if we have a new president and the U.S. Air Force ever decided to go in and attack Iran's nuclear program, the S-300 missiles would be useful to the Iranians to shoot down the attacking planes and to protect and defend Iran's bomb-making program. That's the purpose of the Russian sale to Iran. And Russia is a nation of war criminals, and Vladimir Putin is a KGB Nazi war criminal who wants to help Iran perpetrate a nuclear holocaust. He has done everything that is possible to help Iran build nuclear bombs, and he's the one providing most of the technology and most of the assistance. And now he wants to give them S-300 missiles to help them defend that program against the possible preemptive attack from the United States or Israel. And Obama says, I'm surprised Putin didn't sell them the S-300 missiles sooner. In other words, he's justifying Russia selling S-300 missiles to Iran, something which even the European countries, even the Jew-hating Nazi European countries, condemned the Russian sale of S-300 missiles to Iran. And Obama's now saying, no, what do you mean? I'm surprised they didn't do it sooner. In other words, he's saying they're justified and they should have done it even sooner. That's in effect what he's saying. It is unbelievable how obvious his intentions are and how dangerous this individual is, how dangerous his actions are. And it may, you know, the presidential election may even be too late to correct this. They're going to lift all the sanctions, God forbid. They're going to have everything on a silver platter. Hey, if that happens, Iran is going to get their hands on nuclear bombs very, very fast. Or at least the ability to immediately create a nuclear bomb very fast. A few weeks earlier, Obama said openly in an interview that the amount of time they'll need to create a nuclear bomb under the agreement will go down to zero. In other words, they'll be able to create it overnight if they want to, under this wonderful agreement that he's putting together. So there's no doubt whose side Obama is on. He is justifying what Iran does. He's justifying what Russia is doing to help Iran. He's saying Russia should have done it even sooner. He's surprised they didn't do it even sooner. He wants to remove all sanctions on Iran immediately, something no one ever proposed, ever even thought of proposing. It's absolutely beyond belief. It's like the Ayatollah is in the White House, and the Ayatollah is running American foreign policy. And this is what we warned about. How could the American people have elected a Muslim like this, a dangerous, hateful, traitor Muslim like this to the presidency of the United States? This is what he's doing now. These are the policies, he's pursuing these policies that, God forbid, if not reversed, will lead to a nuclear holocaust, God forbid. And we told you so. No one else did. Now people are saying, analysts are saying this. Oh, they're shocked and surprised. Israeli analysts on Israel. We have an article on our great English news page that Israeli experts and analysts on Channel 10 News in Israel were stunned. They were surprised. They couldn't believe. They're surprised that Obama said that he's surprised that Russia didn't sell the missiles to Iran sooner. These are the so-called experts. How come JTF gets it right and all the experts all get it wrong, whether it's on Oslo or whether it was on Arafat or whether it was on the war in Iraq, which was a disaster? We said it would be a disaster. We said it would lead to a pro-Iranian regime, which is what you have there now. How come we get it right? And all the experts, all the brilliant professors and generals and experts and consultants, they always get it wrong. Their predictions do not come true. ours do. How is that possible? Obama is a Muslim. He's a Jew hater. What he's doing is extremely dangerous. And I hope and pray that we have enough time with the next president to stop this. But then again, what good will it do if the next president is Hillary Clinton? Because if the next president is Hillary Clinton, then we're going to see a continuation of the Obama policy. She's the one who started these negotiations with Iran. So there won't be any difference if Hillary Clinton is in the White House. You're going to see a continuation of this. This is the great danger that we're in, because we have a cowardly prime minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, who allows this to go on and doesn't send in the Israeli Air Force and take care of this problem once and for all. And if Obama gets angry and screams and yells and condemns, who gives a damn? That's what a true Jewish prime minister would say. When the very survival of Israel hangs in the balance, and there's a threat of nuclear annihilation and Holocaust, we're going to worry about offending Obama? This is the prime minister of Israel. I'm not even allowed to step foot into Israel. And this is the prime minister of Israel. This is his policies. And he's called a hardliner. He's called a hardliner and a right winger. And he's allowing Obama to do whatever he wants. The only way to stop Obama is not to make a speech to Congress. It's to send in the Israeli Air Force and destroy that program now. And Israel has the military capability to do it. Now, of course, the other possibility is that somehow, God willing, they don't build their nuclear bombs, they don't get everything together in time, somehow through some miracle, and we elect a president who changes these policies, and the new American president saves the situation. That's the only other possibility that I can see right now. That's the only other thing I can see on the horizon right now. Of course, God can do all types of miraculous things. God can change things or move things any way he wishes. But from what I can see on the horizon right now, those are the only two possibilities I see. Either that somehow through some miracle, we finally get Israel to do what she's supposed to be doing, and I don't think that's going to happen. Or that we get an American president like Ted Cruz who's going to go in and he's going to take care of the problem. And what a disgrace, by the way, that an American president like Ted Cruz would have to come in to take care of it. It's a chilul Hashem, it's a desecration of God's name, that we have to wait for Ted Cruz and the Americans to take care of a problem that Israel should be taking care of now. But anyway, that's what's at stake in this upcoming election. I don't even know if we have enough time until the inauguration of a new president and the new president takes power and deals with this issue. I don't even know if we have enough time. I don't know if we'll have enough time. But as far as I can see, it seems to be the last thing we've got, the last realistic chance we have here. And then, you know, talking about how bad things are in Israel with the so-called Israeli prime minister and his pathetic policies here in the United States, what are the chances of Ted Cruz becoming president? I mean, come on. According to the polls, Hillary Clinton is leading in all of the polls. She's the favorite to be elected to the presidency. This is the same America that twice elected Barack Hussein Obama. The majority of the American people twice voted to put Barack Hussein Obama in the White House. You don't think the same American electorate would put Hillary Clinton in the White House? Of course. So our chances of getting a president who will do what should be done, the odds are against us on that too. And as far as winning Ted Cruz would have to win the Republican nomination, because there are other Republicans running for the nomination who are no better than Obama, like Rand Paul. Rand Paul is the same thing as Obama. His policies on Iran are the same thing. He's also rooting for Iran against Israel. He's also a Jew hater. And so we're faced with a situation where there is a very, very serious danger on the horizon. And now more than ever, we have got to make people aware. We're not allowed to be silent. We must speak out. We must try to wake people up in America and in Israel as quickly as possible. That's our job. True, we don't have the funds we need to really wake the American people up, the Israeli people up. How many are we going to reach out of 300 million Americans, out of 6 million Jews in Israel? Are we going to reach that many in time? Are we going to, you know, we can only do what we can only do. But that does not absolve us of the responsibility to do whatever we can, as much as we can, and try the best that we can. We're required to do that. We're not allowed to be silent. And even if we're the only voice of sanity here, we've got to speak out. And by the way, we're not the only voice of sanity. Ted Cruz has been a voice of sanity on this issue. Ted Cruz said that this is the deal he would offer to Iran. They have to dismantle their entire nuclear program immediately. And it has to be strictly and immediately and clearly verified. And if they won't dismantle their entire program immediately, he said, we'll go in and do it for them. In other words, he's saying that he would use military power to destroy Iran's nuclear program if they won't destroy it voluntarily. So Ted Cruz has been saying the right things on this issue. He's the best of all the candidates on the issue of Iran. He has also said correctly that Iran developing nuclear bombs is the greatest threat to United States national security, not just to Israel's survival, but to the survival and security of the United States as well. Let us not forget that, as Ted Cruz has pointed out, we have certain holidays in the United States, July 4th, President's Day. Unfortunately, we have Martin Luther King Day, honoring that communist. But we have all these holidays in the United States. You know in Iran that there's a national holiday called Death to America Day? That's a holiday. There's a national holiday in Iran called Death to America Day, where millions of Iranians get together and chant together with the Ayatollah, together with the dictator of Iran, the Ayatollah, Death to America. They all chant Death to America. They repeatedly chant Death to America at huge rallies with millions of Iranian Muslims screaming Death to America. And that's the name of their holiday, Death to America. That's who the United States is signing agreements with. And if they violate the agreement, millions of people can be slaughtered in a nuclear holocaust. I mean, And I'm saying if they violate the agreement, does anybody doubt that they will violate the agreement? Does anybody in their right mind doubt that these evil, fanatic, lying, cheating, murderous beasts are going to violate the agreement as they always have done in the past? Can anyone even doubt that? That's what we're facing in this election. That's what we're facing now, the danger that we're facing. And so JTF has several things that we're going to try to do as best we can. Number one, you know that we're going to try to keep alerting people about the urgency of this issue. The American people with English language videos, the people of Israel with Hebrew language videos, that you know we've been doing all along and will continue to do to the best of our ability. And hundreds of thousands of people have seen our videos on this subject, but it's not good enough. It's not good enough. We have to spread the word as much as possible. And we will continue to do it again to the best of our ability, God willing. And, of course, the second thing we want to do is elect Ted Cruz to the presidency. If Ted Cruz doesn't get the Republican nomination, I hope whoever does get the nomination will also take a strong position on Iran. I hope so. I hear some of the other candidates making statements on Iran, but, you know, I would trust Ted Cruz more than I would trust them. First of all, when I say trust, I don't trust human beings because I know human behavior. I trust God. But to the degree that we have to have some trust in someone, if I had to say that there's someone that I would think would be best for us, I would have to say it's Ted Cruz. He certainly has taken the best positions, and he certainly is the most courageous candidate, the most uncompromising candidate. He would be the best one for us. And put aside what he stands for on all these other issues, on the other issues, I also think he's good. But put that aside for a moment. If he saves Israel and the world from a nuclear holocaust, that in and of itself is more than enough reason to support him. And he's saying that he will do that, that he'll take the action that's necessary. He's saying, I'm going to demand they dismantle the whole nuclear program, and if they don't, we're going to go in and do it for them. Now, that is the type of position we want to see. So, we're going to try to keep people aware of what's going on this issue. We're going to speak out as much as we can. We will try to do what we can to influence the debate on this issue that will take place in the Congress and with the American public and the debate that takes place in Israel. And of course, we will try, we'll do everything we can to try to elect Ted Cruz to the presidency to try to stop Hillary Clinton. She has to be stopped. Hillary Clinton, if she's president, it's a continuation of the Obama policies on Iran and on every other issue. And that's just a nightmare. That's just a nightmare. That means a nuclear Iran, God forbid, and it means a nuclear arms race where a dozen other Muslim countries are going to work to acquire nuclear bombs, God forbid. Just a nightmare beyond all description. All of that is at stake. And remember, we've told you all along what's going to happen here unless people wake up. We've warned these things are going to happen. We've been right all along. So I think people who hear this message should take it seriously. This is a very real life and death threat here. A very real threat. And we had better be prepared to speak out and do everything we can, because let no one say that we weren't warned, that we weren't told, that we didn't know. That's what they said after the Holocaust. They said, we didn't know that there was a Holocaust. We didn't know. How are we supposed to know? Those people are lying. First of all, if they didn't know, they should have known. They should have taken the trouble to find out what's going on. But many of them, especially the Jewish leaders, they certainly did know what was going on. And not only did nothing, they did everything they could to prevent the rescue of the 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. We're now facing that type of danger again. We really are facing that danger again. And so we've got to speak out and speak out as much as we can and do everything we can and hope that God will somehow save us from this catastrophe. If Ted Cruz were in the White House, if the Iranians don't acquire nuclear bombs before then, and if Ted Cruz is in the White House, that could save us. God willing. And I know that the odds are against him winning. I understand that. I understand that. But whatever the odds are, we've got to try as best we can to help him. The odds sometimes are against things, and sometimes things happen anyway, against the odds. That can happen. So we have a very, very critical role to play here. I think you've seen that we're doing Hebrew and English videos now. We're putting up videos on these subjects now. We're warning people. We're doing whatever we can to keep people alert and to wake people up, more accurately, to wake people up. Now more than ever, JTFers, you should act on this like your life depends upon it. Because believe it or not, it really does. Your life in this world, more importantly, your eternal life. Because God will ask you on the day of judgment, what did you do when you knew that Israel was faced with the danger of a nuclear holocaust? And the United States is faced with the danger of nuclear holocaust if Iran goes nuclear. What did you do when you knew this? How did you react? And God doesn't demand that we succeed, but he does demand that we try the best we can, do everything we can. That he demands. And so let's fight this battle like our lives depend upon it, like our eternal future depends upon it. Because believe me when I tell you, it is no exaggeration. It does. It does. And you know, I see Ted Cruz making speeches compared to the other Republican candidates, and he is so eloquent and so articulate. The Republicans are nuts for not wanting to grab him right away and make him their candidate. He is by far the most articulate, the most eloquent, of all the Republican candidates by far. We're going to be showed you, we just put up a video today of him just answering a question on the Second Amendment so brilliantly, defending the Second Amendment rights of American citizens to bear arms brilliantly. And we're going to be putting up a lot more videos, God willing, showing him, because he really proves our case. He's such a good speaker. He proves our case better than anyone else can in terms of why he would be so effective as a candidate. We're going to be, I'm hoping to put up a lot more of his stuff, because I want to spread his message as much as possible. The more people that see him, the better. And so, we're going to try. And also, I want to erase the disgrace of 2008 when 78% of American Jews voted for that Muslim Jew-hating piece of subhuman filth, Barack Hussein Obama, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. 78% of American Jews voted for that piece of filth, Obama. And then I think it was 71% or 72% or something like that voted for him in 2012. What a disgrace. We got to do everything we can to show that at least we are not like that, and we will do everything we can against that. That we're not going to support people who want to destroy our own brothers and sisters. That we are loyal to what God demands us to be loyal to. And so that's also a reason why we've got to play a big role in this upcoming campaign as much as we can. To show that there at least are sane, normal, God-fearing Jews who do the right thing, who take the right stands, who fight for what's right, who want to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests. If the Jews were fighting to put Ted Cruz in the White House, then they would be acting like a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. That's what a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests would be telling the nations of the world, that we need Ted Cruz as president. Not Obama or Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush or Rand Paul. And thankfully, thank God, there's no excuse here, because God has given us here a candidate, Ted Cruz, who is so eloquent and so articulate. He's the best debater, the best speaker by far among all the candidates. So, we got to promote him, and we got to spread the word as much as possible. And we should do it not as part of his campaign. Specifically, our group, Jews for Cruz, JTF, Jews for Cruz, we should do it as. Not because I want his campaign to succeed as well. I do want his campaign to succeed. But I want specifically to erase the disgrace of Jews who support Clinton and Obama and all these other beasts. I want specifically to confront that and deal with that, and only through JTF we can do that. If JTF plays a big role, and if we change the dynamics of how people see Jews responding to the election, or at least we change it to a certain degree, to the best of our ability, that would be very important. Very important. Anyway, we've got to stop Hillary Clinton. We've got to speak out now, because there's this tremendous threat. And JTF is the vehicle, because we have to show that there are Jews who are sane and normal and want to survive and want to do what God commands, and that those Jews are going to do everything they can to help Ted Cruz and to fight against the nuclear Iran, and to be loyal to Israel, as God in the Bible commands us to be. A number of things we need you to do to help us, because we're a team now. We got to fight like a team now. Number one, we need your prayers. Every day, pray for our success. Every day, pray for us. And pray, of course, for the survival of Israel, and pray that Iran doesn't get the nuclear bombs, and pray on all of these issues. Pray that Ted Cruz succeed in his campaign for the presidency, and that he keep his word, be strong enough, that he'll be strong enough to keep his word if he becomes president, to do what he's promising to do now. So we need prayers. That's very important. And pray that JTF gets strong enough. Because if Chaim Ben Pesach were prime minister, we wouldn't have these worries right now. So we need your prayers. That's number one. And the second thing we need is to help us when you see us putting up the Hebrew and English videos. Promote them. Promote them. Put the videos all over on pages on Facebook that you think, where people you think might be interested in the videos. And like and favorite, and do all the other things to promote them on YouTube and on Facebook. Promote those videos, the Hebrew and the English videos. That's the second thing. And the third thing is to join and become active and go every day to our great new news page that Shlomo, our great administrator, has put together, because we have a great news page. Let's make it a big successful. It is the best news page on the internet. The most relevant, with the most relevant subjects. There is no news page on the internet. None. That has subjects that will be more relevant to your eternal future than what you see on that JTF news page. None. And someday you'll see that I'm right. Someday you'll see. So become active on that news page. Go every day. Look at the latest news. And if you see articles or if you see videos, or if you see things on the news page that you like, spread the word and become active yourself. Make comments and spread the word. That's the third thing you can do. And the fourth thing you can do, most importantly, of course, every check, every money order, every cash donation made or sent to our post office box, it does make a big difference. Obviously, the more support we get, the stronger we are, and the more we can spread the word, obviously. And I think you know that our big downfall is that we don't have the budget that we need. If we had a real budget, we had a big budget, oh, what we could do. Oh, what we could, you see, even Ted Cruz, he's raising tens of millions of dollars right now, but he can't say what we can say because he's the candidate. He can't speak the way we can speak. We independently, we can say things that he can't say. We can do things that he can't do. Because we're not running for office. If we had the resources, there's no question that we'd make a historic difference, and we'd make that historic difference very quickly. We have to work with what we've got, and every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a difference. It makes a difference. So please continue to help us. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us on a regular basis very generously. And if you haven't done that yet, please, we need your support. And those of you that don't want to send checks or money orders or cash donations through the regular mail because it's more convenient, because you find it more convenient to do it on the internet, that's fine. There's no problem with that. You can do it with your credit card by going to the donate button on our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org, our Hebrew main page. On top, there is a donate button in English. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can conveniently make a donation. If you haven't done so, please do so. You could do it either through the credit card online, or you could do it by sending it to the post office box, whatever's easier for you. This is the moment of truth. Actually, the next year and a half is going to be the moment of truth. Help us. Let's fight together as a team. Let's do all the things we have to do as a team. And then let's hope that God has mercy on his people and has mercy on good people everywhere so that we can win this battle before it, and we can prevent a terrible, terrible tragedy from happening in this world. Because if the Muslim terrorist nations like Iran and Saudi Arabia and all these other countries, if they get their hands on nuclear weapons, God forbid, it will be a terrible, terrible tragedy. So let's get active now and let's do what we have to do now to prevent this, God willing. Okay, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Today marks the 20th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. Do you remember it?" Unquote. Of course I remember it. I remember it well, that Nazi lunatic Timothy McVeigh blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City, murdering so many innocent women and children, just people that innocent people and people who are mainly decent evangelical Christian type people in Oklahoma, because who lives in Oklahoma? Mainly evangelical Christians. And those are the people that this Nazi beast decided to murder when he blew up the building in Oklahoma City. It was a terrible, terrible crime, and this is what these Nazis are like. The Nazis thought it was great. All the Nazi and Klan organizations, they loved it. The Nazis and the Klan, they were happy when the Oklahoma City bombing happened. They were happy when 3,000 Americans were murdered on 9/11. They love those things. I remember in the Oklahoma City bombing, you had Ku Klux Klan and Nazi groups saying, oh, he killed all these Jews in the building in Oklahoma City. There wasn't as far as I know, there wasn't a single Jew there that was killed. There were no Jews there. There are very, very few Jews in Oklahoma. And as far as I know, not a single Jew was killed or injured in that attack. Of all the many people who were murdered and injured in that attack. But they were saying, oh, he killed all the Jews there. These are such sick, evil organizations. Monsters, just monsters. Wandering Samurai now writes, also discuss Greg Abbott of Texas, unquote. Greg Abbott is the governor of Texas. I don't like him because he's an establishment guy. He claims to be a conservative Republican. He's an establishment guy. I don't like him. I like Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is not part of the establishment. He bucks the establishment. I think Greg Abbott is part of the establishment. So, you know, I don't like people that are in the establishment. The establishment in this country, which is controlled by multinational corporations and billionaires, these are evil people who are destroying America and Western civilization. And they're not people who deserve any respect or admiration from any of us, in my view. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think it will take to stop Hillary Clinton from being the next president? Can you curse her? Thanks, unquote. I think that it will take all of us doing the best we can. And when I say all of us, I don't mean just JTF. Of course, tens of millions of Americans are against her, and all of us should be as active as possible in trying to persuade the American people not to do this horrific, this would be a horrific tragedy for the world if she becomes president. She will continue the horrible policies that Obama has in place that are leading to catastrophe. And so, Joe, what I want to do, I want to make sure that we as Jewish activists and our Gentile friends who work with us, that we do our job. Let's make sure that we've done what we could do to stop her. That we've done whatever we could do to stop her. And we're trying to do that, Joe. We're trying to do that, God willing. Of course I curse her. Yimach shma v'zichra shem reshaim yirkav, which means may her name and memory be obliterated, and may the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Joe. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, HM is History Month. Okay, I didn't know what HM meant. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just thick-headed. I don't know. I didn't get it. But anyway, Lewinsky Stinks now writes, so what's worse, Schwarze or Middle Eastern History Month? Okay. it's a tough choice. They're both so terrible. Schwarze History Month destroys Western civilization. Middle Eastern History Month goes against God's project in the Middle East to create a Jewish homeland and a Jewish state that will be a light unto the nations and will bring redemption to the world. So it's a pretty tough choice there. I mean, the distortions and the lies of their so-called history months and their recreations of history that never existed are a threat to things that are very important. I'm going to say Middle Eastern history is a little bit worse because God's bringing of the Jews back to the land of Israel and, you know, you see the centrality of that, how central that is to the redemption of the world in the Bible. So I'm going to make that number one on the list. But Schwarze History Month is also the distortions, the destruction, the destructive impact on Western civilization, on Western society, is also something that has devastating consequences for the world. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, respond to the claims that Mahmoud Abbas is a descendant of the apostle Barnabas and that Jesus and the first Christians were fake Athenians, unquote. Look, they want to recreate their history and make up things as they go. I mean, this is so... First of all, they talk about the first Christian. Look what they do to Christians. They are crucifying Christian children in the Middle East. They grab Christian children, the Muslim terrorists, and put them on crosses and crucify them. They burn them alive, they rape them, they crucify them, they cut their heads off. And then when they speak to the Westerners, to the stupid infidels, they say to the stupid infidels, oh, look, the first Christians were fake Athenians. Please, everyone knows who the first Christians were. Anyone who reads the Bible, anyone who reads the Christian Bible, knows who the first Christians were. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, explain how students can get taught that the ancient Egyptians, Persians, and Greeks were sub-Saharan Africans 1 month and that they were Arabs 2 months later, unquote. Excellent point. Yeah, in the university system, first they tell you that all the great civilizations were really blacks. The ancient Greeks, even Europeans, like the ancient Greeks, were black. Everybody was black. Everybody black, 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 black. You know, they were all black. And then when it's Muslim History Month, you know, they all become, they're all Arabs. Of course. I mean, excellent point. Excellent point. Because the people who are teaching these things know that this is nonsense. They know it's absurd. They don't care. They're not interested. They're not interested in whether or not it's absurd. They're just interested in brainwashing people for their propaganda purposes. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, discuss the Saudi intellectual, quote-unquote, who claimed Shakespeare was an Arab, unquote. Oh, yes, that was a Saudi, this was in Britain. He said, Shakespeare, because of the name Shakespeare, it's chic. That comes from the word like chic. Shakespeare is Shakespeare. He was a sheik. He was a Muslim sheik. And they try to prevent you from knowing about this. Yes. Yeah. Oh. They all create their own history like Muhammad and the Muslims came before the Jews and before everybody. Yeah. King David was a Muslim. Jesus was a Muslim. Of course, everybody, you know, they're all Muslims. Moses was Musa, he was a Muslim. King David King David lived 4,000 years ago and was a Muslim. And the hilarious distortions of the Bible in the Quran, you read the Quran, they try to recount the biblical stories and try to tell us stories even from the Talmud. Completely distorted. Completely distorted, and just—it's hilarious. I mean, what a book of ignoramuses! I mean, a book written for ignoramuses, and 1.5 billion people believe in this insanity. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We now go to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote: "Draw parallels between Saudi Arabia and Ottoman Empire." Unquote. Well, both of them are Muslim, and both of them were evil, and cruel, and corrupt, but. As far as fighting capacity, the Ottoman Empire, I mean, they were evil and corrupt and despicable and bloodthirsty, but they were fighters. They were conquerors. I mean, the Ottoman Empire, the Turks and the Ottoman Empire conquered a large part of Europe and were brutal conquerors who also conquered huge portions of the Middle East. They were fighters. They were very fair soldiers and fighters and conquerors. Saudi Arabia, on the other hand, and I'm not talking about the Saudi Arabia in the days of Muhammad, but I'm talking about the Saudi Arabia of today, they would have a hard time fighting against Disneyland. They can't defend themselves against anything. So in that respect, there's a big difference between them. The Saudis are not fighters at all. They're cowards. They're not fighters at all. They have a lot of money, and so they hire foreign mercenaries to do their fighting for them, including the United States military. United States military act like foreign mercenaries for Saudi Arabia. Anyway, and they detest the United States. Oh, do they detest the United States. And America slavishly fights their battles and protects them and enables them to rip us off trillions of dollars in petrodollar ripoffs. What an unbelievable farce. What an unbelievable farce. Smash Islam now writes, talk Brunei Sharia. Well, Brunei is a Muslim country, or at least I think about two-thirds of their population is Muslim, something like that. I know that there are people in Brunei who are not Muslim, but they have Chinese people and other people who are not. But I think about two-thirds of their population are Muslims. I don't remember. It's not a big country. I think you have 400,000 or 500,000 people there. And they are Muslims, and they do have Sharia law in place. Beyond that, I don't know. I know everywhere where Sharia is, there is darkness. Darkness. Even though they discovered oil and natural gas, they've made discoveries in Brunei that have turned that into a very wealthy little country. Brunei has become a wealthy little country because we have leaders that have not developed America's energy potential. America could provide energy for the rest of the world if we had a real president, real leadership. But because we don't have that, these puny little Muslim pipsqueak country like Brunei, a puny little pipsqueak Muslim Nazi country like Brunei can become very rich, and they impose their Sharia law on their population. I don't know specifically what that entails, but I do know that everywhere where Sharia is Islamic law, everywhere where Sharia is in place, it's a nightmare. Sharia brings darkness, only darkness, everywhere where it's imposed. Smash Islam now writes, discuss the following great quote-unquote Islamic figures. Ibn Saud. Ibn Saud was the first king of Saudi Arabia. He was a corrupt, evil, lowlife, piece of filth, of course. The British put him, the British are the ones that put him in charge of Saudi Arabia. The British gave him the power. He didn't have the power to do anything by himself. He had 45 sons. 45 sons. I don't know how many daughters he had. He didn't count. The daughters don't count to him. He doesn't care about his girls. But he had 45 sons. And of course, he started the spread of the Saudi Wahhabi Muslim barbarian ideology that led to 9/11 and that led to the Islamic State. Now, the Islamic State terrorists, they come from that Wahhabi tradition. So does Al-Qaeda. That's Ibn Saud. And Muammar Gaddafi was the dictator of Libya, a murderer, a beast, unfortunate with a Libyan Jewish mother. Yes, his mother was a Libyan Jew. They covered it up, but his mother was actually a Libyan Jewish woman. He himself, of course, became a Muslim and hated the Jews and wanted to murder all the Jews. This is what happens, you know, when you have a self-hating Jew. And he became the terrorist dictator of Libya for decades and ruled Libya for decades and committed his atrocious crimes. And then Saladin. Okay, Saladin was the Muslim leader who fought the Crusaders. He was the Sultan of Egypt and Syria. He was a Muslim leader, so obviously we're not talking about a believer in human rights or in human dignity. Or humanitarian here. Obviously, you're talking about a very cruel, barbaric figure in history. You know, obviously, but he was the one they love him because he fought off the Crusaders. Thank you, Smash Islam, and we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote: "Comment on these black creatures." One, Aubrey Eugene Robinson sentenced Jonathan Pollard. Unquote. Oh yeah, that black animal judge. You know, all the Jews always want to put blacks on the bench. I think is it Robinson or Rob Beeson? I'm not sure. Rob Beeson without an N, I'm not sure. But, you know, all the Jews always fight to put blacks on the bench and give blacks political power. These sick, self-hating Jews. And then when you put them on the bench, the first thing they do when they get a Jewish hero like Jonathan Pollard, they put them in prison for life without parole. He put him in with life with the recommendation that he never get paroled. That's, in other words, he gave him the worst sentence he could possibly give him, even though, by the way, it was a violation of Pollard's plea agreement. Pollard made a plea agreement, and he was not supposed to get a severe sentence. They broke their word. They lied. They did everything to him under the sun, that if he had been black or Arab or Muslim, oh, what a scandal. This would be a scandal we would never hear the end of. And the judge who did it, the judge who sentenced him, of course, was this black animal, this black affirmative action moron animal, Obrey Robinson or Robison, who, thank God, Baruch Hashem, is now dead and burning in hellfire. You know who wrote to him before the sentencing? That other animal, Casper Weinberger, wrote to him that Pollard actually also passed information on to South Africa, you know, to the white apartheid regime in South Africa, he claimed, which was a complete lie. Pollard only gave information to Israel, and the information he gave to Israel was beneficial. It was beneficial to the United States that he gave this information to Israel. Pollard is an American hero and a Jewish hero. But anyway, Weinberger, whose grandfather was Jewish, and so he hates the Jewish people, wants to destroy the Jewish people, like John Kerry and all the other, you know, anyone, these people come from intermarried families in so many cases are the worst anti-Semites. They despise that portion of their family that was Jewish. And they want to wipe out the Jewish people desperately. And that was the Jew-hater Casper Weinberger. So he wrote to this black judge and lied and said that the Pollard had sent information over to South Africa, which is a complete lie. And another one who wrote to him was Mayor Edwina Koch, the self-hating Judenrat Kapo mayor of New York that all the Jews loved, that ran around with a dress on. Edwina Koch would run around in the Greenwich Village with a dress on saying, "How am I doing? How am I doing?" And all the Jews loved him. Now he's buried in a church, by the way. He said, "I want to be buried in a church. I want to be buried in a cemetery in the church." Anyway, Edwina Koch also wrote to Jonathan Pollard's judge, black judge, urging that he get the maximum penalty. By the way, Edwina Koch wrote to my judge when I was facing sentencing, urging that I get the maximum penalty as well. Edwina Koch bragged about the fact that when there were Jewish defendants who did something on behalf of the Jewish people, he would immediately write to the judges and demand that they get the maximum penalty. That's Edwina Koch. Yimach shmo v'zichro, yimach shma v'zichra, and I'm not sure. I don't think anybody's really sure at this point. But he certainly, he and Weinberger, the Kochgala and Weinberger are both in, they're both roasting in a very warm place. And Binyamin now writes too, wants me to comment on Cynthia McKinney.
Oh, Cynthia McKinney? Ooh, she was a black congresswoman from Georgia. And, you know, she said that the Jews are the ones who did 9/11. The Mossad. Oh, yeah. Oh, they was behind 9/11. Bush knew all about it.
Yeah, and she ran, and then she ran as the Green Party candidate for president. Should have run as the Black Party candidate, but anyway, she ran as the Green Party candidate for president in 2008. Oh, what a vicious Jew hater. You know, and all the Jews give all the money to the Congressional Black Caucus and all the black politicians, and then AIPAC says, oh, they're very pro-Israel. All these black politicians are very pro-Israel. We want to give them awards, we and the ADL and the UJA and the AJC and all of the organizations. We got to give them awards. They're wonderful. They're very pro-Israel. Yeah. Anyway, Cynthia McKinney, she was a black congresswoman, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, and she said Israel and the Mossad, they're the ones who did 9/11 together with Bush. And now Binyamin asks about Shirley Chisholm. Oh, that's another one.
She was a black congresswoman from Bedford-Stuyvesant. She's another one. She ran for president. Oh, yeah.
Oh, was she a moron? Oh, was she a moron? And she was the first black to actually run for president. She actually ran for president. Anyway, she paved the road for other great blacks like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and Barack Hussein Obama. And maybe maybe Michelle Obama will run someday.
Mm-hmm.
And next we have Charlie Rangel. Charlie Rangel is the Jew-hating, racist, black congressman from Harlem in New York. He's a vicious Jew-hater, real anti-Semite. He threatened the Jews after the Crown Heights pogroms in 1993. He warned them they better vote for David Dinkins for re-election. He said, because we don't like people that look different from us. You know what I mean? So he was threatening them, you know, that they better vote. They had better vote for Dinkins for re-election. I mean, what? And of course, who gives him money? Who contributes to him? Who helps him? Who gives him honors and awards and kisses his behind? The ADL and the AJC and the UJA and AIPAC, and he's very pro-Israel. He is pro-Israel. Everybody say it at once. He is pro-Israel. Everyone is pro-Israel. All the members of Congress are pro-Israel. Anyway, that's AIPAC. And half the members of AIPAC are Orthodox Jews. They're helping Israel by joining that leftist piece of dreck organization. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "The situation is turning dire as the Iranian terrorist regime is able to get S-300 air defense systems that would make airstrike impossible," unquote. It will certainly make it more difficult. I don't think it will make it impossible, but it will make it more difficult. Yes, I agree with you. And, you know, as we said in the opening of the show, Obama, he said he was surprised the Russians didn't send it to them sooner. He thinks they should have sent it sooner. Thank you, Righteous Indian Gentile. And we go now to Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "German writer Gunter Grass croaked a couple of days ago. What do you think of a warm-hearted and tender Kahane's blessing," quote-unquote, "for him," unquote? Oh, absolutely. Gunter Grass, for those of you who don't know, he wrote the Tin Drum and various other books about... And, he, you know, some of the things he said, by the way, were true. Like in the Tin Drum, he shows how the whole German people did support the Nazis, that there was virtually universal support for Hitler and the Nazis among the German people. In books like Tin Drum, you see the Tin Drum, you see that. And he speaks like he's the moral conscience of Germany. And then, what does he do? This is someone who writes about the Holocaust and what the Jews did and what was done to the Jews in the Holocaust, and he's supposed to be the moral voice, and then he turns on Israel and starts condemning Israel. And this is a guy who condemns Israel, boycotts Israel, condemns Israel, supports Israel's enemies, and then he talks about a German who lived through the Holocaust, and he's condemning Israel on moral grounds. Can you imagine the chutzpah, the gall of this filthy Nazi pig? And surely enough, by the way, what do we know about him? He served in the Nazi SS, the most murderous organization in history, the Nazi SS, and volunteered to fight for the Nazi German army. So this is someone who was a volunteer, enthusiastic volunteer to fight for the Führer, and he gives moral lectures now to Israel, and the Jews tolerate this and don't tell him and everyone else there where to go. And the blessing for him, you want a blessing? Yes, he certainly deserves one. Yimash movazichro shem reshaim yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Da Vinci. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, why can't a bike be used on Shabbat, non-motorized?" Unquote. Okay. We're not supposed to do on Shabbat things that we do on regular days. And the purpose of a bicycle usually is to travel a longer distance than you travel when you're just walking. That's usually what a bike is for. Shabbat is supposed to be different. The Sabbath is supposed to be different. And so bicycle riding would make it like any other day. It would be a mundane activity, and it would also make it like any other day. for many people. Many other people then would start treating Shabbat like a weekday, if they could ride their bicycle and do all these other things. That's not the purpose of Shabbat. And so bicycle travel is forbidden on Shabbat by the rabbis for that reason. Because it turns Shabbat into the same type of... It creates an atmosphere where Shabbat is like any other day. And it also encourages people to travel long distances, which we're not supposed to do. We're not supposed to travel long distances on Shabbat. So it would create... It doesn't add to the honor and the beauty of Shabbat if we have people running around riding on bicycles. I'm all in favor of riding on bicycles during the week because it's very healthy, it's good exercise. Everybody knows that I'm a believer in exercise and I'm a believer in healthy behavior. I'm all for riding a bicycle during the week, but on Shabbat, that's something we don't do because Shabbat is a special day. And the second question is, too, your thoughts on the kosher light switch, unquote. The kosher light switch is not kosher. It's not kosher. And in fact, we have an article on it on our main page. And some of the so-called rabbis, or some of the rabbis, the real rabbis that they used in the advertising, claiming that these rabbis endorsed it, have said that they in fact did not endorse it. It's completely misleading. And it is not, the kosher light switch is not kosher. It's not permitted. And again, if you go to the main page and scroll down on our main page on JTF.org, on our main page, you'll see an article about the kosher light switch and the fact that the rabbis make it very clear that it is not kosher and we're not allowed to have, this special light switch on the Sabbath. We're talking about on the Sabbath. The light switch is on the Sabbath. In other words, this would be a way to turn the light on, supposedly in a kosher way, on Shabbat, on the Sabbath. And when this particular device is not permitted, and we can't do it. We're not allowed to do it. Okay. And I'm not talking about a timer. A timer is a different thing. For those who know what I'm speaking about, a timer is something else. There are timers on Shabbat that you can use. This is something different. And again, you go to our main page, you'll see the difference. Dr. Dan now writes, 3, your thoughts of not cutting a boy's hair until 3, unquote. Okay, that's a tradition. Certain people follow that tradition that they don't cut their son's hair until the age of 3. I could give you the spiritual Kabbalistic reasons for it, you know, that hair has spiritual power and strength, like the hair of Shimshon. Shimshon was Samson. And that we want to give the child maximum power, spiritual power, until he's 3 years old. And then we cut his hair because we don't want to give him too much power because that could be harmful. So at age 3, the hair is cut. A lot of that is symbolic. I think a lot of it is symbolic. But it's a tradition. I don't think there's anything wrong with the tradition. If people feel that that's a tradition that they want to abide by, it's not required. It's a minhag. It's not something that's required, but if people want to follow that tradition, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Another reason why some people don't cut their son's hair until the age of 3 is also to teach that we can't cut in the area of the peyot. In other words, in the area of the side locks, we're not allowed to be cutting there. We're not allowed to cut too much in that area. We're not allowed to cut in that area above a certain point. And to emphasize that point and emphasize the importance of not cutting around that point, we don't cut the child's hair until the age of 3. So that's something else that certain rabbis mention in that regard. But again, there are religious Jews who do this and there are religious Jews who don't do this. It's not required, but certain communities do have this tradition, and you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I respect if this is their tradition, I respect their right to do it. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Was Harry Truman really a friend to Israel and the Jews?" Unquote. Oh, absolutely not. I'm glad you're asking this. You know, the Jews make everybody pro-Israel. Everybody's our friend. Everybody's pro-Israel. The Jews always do this because you can't tell Jews the truth. Jews are like little children. You always have to give them candy. They won't eat what's healthy. They won't eat their vegetables. They only want candies. They only want things that aren't healthy. They only want everything that's sweet and you know, anything that you have to tell them stories that are fairy tales. They will not accept reality. They will not accept reality. And so they want to believe everybody likes us and everybody's our friend and everybody's wonderful and everybody's pro-Israel. Harry Truman was an enemy of Israel, an enemy of the Jews. Harry Truman did everything he could to prevent the creation of Israel. Harry Truman slapped an arms embargo on Israel in the 1948 War for Independence and shipped arms to Israel's enemies and did everything he could to help the Arabs defeat Israel. And the goal of the Arabs, they openly said in the United Nations in 1948, their goal was to push the Jews into the sea and finish Hitler's job and exterminate the Jewish people. They openly said that. And Truman did everything he could to help them do that. He was never a friend of Israel. Never a friend of Israel or the Jews. And he himself made numerous anti-Semitic comments over the years. Many, many comments against the Jews. He was a Jew hater in every respect. This is just another one of these Jewish fairy tales and Jewish myths that the Jews love to create, because they love to create mythical friends and mythical allies, because they can't face the fact that almost everybody hates them, because it says in the Bible, Am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yitchashav. This is a nation that shall be, lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. So God tells us we're going to be alone, going to be isolated in the world, and it's going to be a blessing. But the Jews don't believe in that. They don't accept that. And so they want to create mythical allies that never existed. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now. And by the way, when a real friend of the Jewish people like Ted Cruz comes along, the Jews don't support him. So that's, you know, AIPAC will say, oh, Obama and Hillary Clinton, they're very pro-Israel, and Jimmy Carter, they're all very pro-Israel. They're pro-Israel, all these Jew-hating animals who want to destroy Israel. But when a real friend like Ted Cruz comes along, him they don't like. So, go figure. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to PMN, who writes, and I quote, Please explain the paradox where leftist, secular, or even atheist Jews speak against religion in Israel, but embrace Judaism as a culture and a race, unquote. Well, the so-called Judaism that they embrace is not, first of all, it's not Judaism. Judaism is a religion. You can't have Judaism without belief in God and belief in the Torah. That is the basis and the foundation of all Judaism, is the Torah. And the Torah means the written Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible, and it means the rest of the books of the Bible, and it means the oral Torah, which is the Mishnah and the Talmud. And all of the oral law, all of that is Torah Judaism. And you can't have a Judaism without that. It doesn't exist. Now, those who say, I'm culturally Jewish, I'm culturally Jewish, they're trying to create their own little culture. And when they do that, their own little culture means as leftists. They try to create a new so-called Jewish existence as Upper West Side leftists. It's absurd. And everything they stand for is diametrically opposed to what authentic Judaism stands for. Thank you, PMN. We go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, how might the Ebola epidemic affect the mass migration of Muslim savages, unquote. Well, if it creates a panic and they all try to come to Western countries, it could have an impact. It could encourage more Muslims to try to come to the United States and other Western countries, which, of course, is not good for the United States and other Western countries. So, you know, that's something that if you had control on the borders in the United States, then we'd have much less of a serious problem here. Thank you, Hiram. And we go now to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about Yisrael Poliakov, Gavri Banai, and Shaki Levy. Shaki Levy. God bless you. Unquote. They were a very funny... I mean, they were actually a pretty funny group of comedians. They're comedians in Israel. From my generation, even before my generation, even going back to the early 60s. Well, I was a little kid when they started, in the mid-60s. And they were actually pretty funny. They actually were quite humorous. They were quite funny sometimes. Unfortunately, Gavri Banai is a self-hating Jew. I don't know about the other two, but I know that Gavri Banai is definitely a self-hating leftist traitor who makes all types of statements supporting leftist causes and backing backing our Arab enemies. So, you know, these are sick, and he's a Sephardic Jew, and he's doing this. So these are sick people. I mean, obviously, I don't care how funny they are. I don't like people who do things like that. But he has a history of doing that. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. And we go to Kahana Loyalist now, who writes, and I quote, "Der Chaim, as vile as ISIS is, do you think this will wake up Jews that the Arab Muslims cannot be negotiated with and must be fought?" Unquote. Hopefully, and I think that that's one of the good things that the Islamic State is doing. The Islamic State is teaching us what authentic Islam is all about. The Islamic State is true Islam. That is true Islam. They're not hijacking the religion. That is true Islam. And so hopefully, yes, hopefully that will wake people up. I think that there are some positive aspects to this, because we'd rather deal with an enemy who honestly tells us what they're all about and exposes what they're all about so that we can see it clearly, than an enemy who engages in taqiyya. Taqiyya is deception in Arabic. Muhammad commanded the Arabs to engage in taqiyya, to lie to the infidels. And so many of the Muslims lie as they wage their jihad against the West. I'd rather deal with Muslims like the Islamic State who are honest, who honestly make it clear they want to destroy us, than the lying snakes and the lying serpents who engage in taqiyya, who engage in deception. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And we go now to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, is it dangerous that the Sunni Arab countries are working together in fighting Iran?" Unquote. It can become very dangerous, yes, because if Iran acquires nuclear bombs, they may also want to acquire nuclear bombs. And of course, you know, when they work together, you know eventually it's going to be used against Israel as well. Look, the Sunnis, the Shiites, they all hate Israel. They all hate the Jews. They hate Israel. They hate America as well. That's the reality. I mean, look, the Shiites are the Iranians. The Sunnis are Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, the Wahhabi Saudis. I mean, which side do you want? Which side is better there? They're both horrific. There are no good sides here. When it comes to Islam, there are no good sides. And that's a reality that we should face. Thank you, Maimonides. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.